Hey everyone, this is a Barclay Damon Live broadcast of the CyberSIP, practical talk about cybersecurity. I'm your host, Kevin Sapansky. Let's talk.
Hey everyone, I am so glad to be joined by the head of cyber for the Americas for Mosaic Insurance Company. Brian Dusek joins us from Chicago. Welcome to CyberSIP, Brian.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm really happy to be here.
We've talked about this for so long, and here we are. So I'm so grateful that you're able to join us today.
I am too. I apologize for all the problems, but once we got my crazy schedule worked out, here we are. So ready to go.
You are a busy man. So let's dive right in. What are some of the trends that you're seeing in your world over the last 12 months? And you can point us anywhere you want to go, but clearly it is a fast changing industry, and there have been a lot of changes and evolutions in the last year. So what are you seeing?
It's a market that's in flux, and I'm kind of tired of saying that, if I'm honest, because the one thing that's is good is that, I'm on the carrier side, of course, but our broker trading partners and everyone who's involved, everyone wants a sustainable market. That's really the goal. That's, a couple of years ago in 2021, we had a hardened market. Some would call it fully hard. Some would call it just a bit tougher than it used to be. But the point was, prices went up, some terms were getting constricted, and a lot of it was in response to a lot of the uptick in ransomware of claims that were coming out, and a lot of, maybe not the only reason, but that was one of the big drivers. And then about, you say, 12 months, it was about a year ago, we started to see things, at least in the U.S., start to stabilize more. And around the time, July 1st being a big renewal point, around those July 1st renewals, really started to see more stabilization. Some of that from more competitors of ours coming in, some more participants, more people who had or carriers who had not kind of pulled back from the market, getting back in, seeing some more favorable rate from their perspective, and thinking that this would be a good time to come back. And now, what we're seeing as in London, it's more of a stabilized market as well. But in the U.S., it's been very an interesting time to be a cyber underwriter. I think we're at a real inflection point right now. We're still seeing, ransomware is coming back. We all know that. I don't think it ever left, quite honestly, but
I don't think so either. But it did quiet down for a while, and I think some people thought, oh, could this be a long-term trend? No, not a long-term trend.
And we all attribute a lot of that, I think, accurately, and it's definitely law enforcement has confirmed that a lot of the people who were engaged in this activity had other things going on, obviously starting in February of last year. So there are groups that might otherwise have been working on their own behalf, were otherwise engaged or working for someone else. And now I guess they can walk and chew gum because some new groups coming out, but also just really seeing I wouldn't say it's back to where it was in any way, but the uptick is coming back. That's you'll see that on a lot of Q1 2023 claims trends, ransomware uptick is every time you get that, you'll get to see 10 of those and get a free punch for your sub card, and there's a free sandwich in your future. So that's fun.
Right. So that's good. That's really good. Now we always like sustainability and capacity. And this is an industry, I think, that is going to have to see increased capacity over time. Of course, that's one of the great things about Mosaic Insurance. You just celebrated, what was it, 2-year anniversary in March?
Yes, we did.
But it's stabilization and capacity of a different character than cyber insurance was 2 years ago, 5 years ago. We're seeing greater controls are expected in the underwriting department of insurance companies. So talk to us about that, Brian. How has the underwriting of cyber changed over time? What can policyholders expect to experience now that they maybe didn't a year or 2 years ago?
I think that I'll even start 4 years ago, 2019, so pre-pandemic, it was a very soft market, and the degree of questions would nowhere near what it would be necessarily now. And not that it's terribly invasive, because and I speak on behalf of the industry, not just our own company, although it's true for us too, that we all are looking to ask the right questions, not ask every question, but ask the right questions. And it doesn't always feel like that when you're the one being questioned, but we have other things to do too. And the last thing I need is to make either the brokers or even most importantly, the insureds think that we have nothing better to do than ask every question under the sun, whether it's germane or not. Because the joke that I make, my shoe size is a fact. It's not germane to anything that I do, but it is a fact.
Right. We don't need to see that on the insurance application.
No. And yeah, if you see Brian's shoe size on an insurance application, that's a red flag right there. But
if that ever were important, it really isn't now in this market.
No. To your point, though, like what they can expect.
Yeah.
I think they can expect more questions about risks that we know are driving loss, and risks that we know haven't necessarily been addressed as comprehensively as we believe they should be. Biometrics being a great example, not just because as I'm sitting here in Illinois, BIPA, which is its own animal, but that biometrics are they're more frequently used. There's not here in the U.S. there's not a clear rule across all industries or across all regions or states. So you do still have to play that patchwork quilt of regulatory. Is it informed consent? Is it written consent? Is that what's enough?
Right.
What suffices? How often do you need to do it? War is always a discussion that's been going on quite a lot right now. But infrastructure, you're going to get asked a lot of questions about that. What kind of backups do you have? Effectively, we are really looking at a culture of cybersecurity at an insured, and we're not looking to again, be invasive. We're not looking to find out information that really doesn't affect the risk, but the idea of getting a good idea, these are millions of dollars of potential risk transfer that are going on. So it is quite serious.
So I'm glad you mentioned biometrics, Brian, because I am actually in New York right now at the mediation of a biometric coverage case. So I think we're all seeing the not only the increased underwriting, but the proliferation of not the biometric claims under the BIPA law in Illinois, but the biometric coverage claims. So they're coming to New York now. And I think more states will be enacting these biometric privacy laws. It's only going to get more intense. So I'm glad you mentioned it. Now, with that in mind, are there, aside from biometrics, Brian, are there certain practices that are getting us as businesses into trouble out there that you're seeing that people should be mindful of?
I'm interrupting you, but they say the being mindful really caught me, because that's the session replay claims we're starting to see come up. And part of the reason there is that when we are having underwriting meetings, whether they're calls or in person, we have the chief information security officers, the CISOs there, which I always wonder if I'm saying it wrong, because I've heard Bill say CISO, so I'm just going to go with CISO.
I've heard it. I say CISO. CISOs say CISO, but I've heard CISO. I've heard CISO too from CISOs and CISO. So I'm glad you said that you're not sure, because I've heard it three different ways, and I didn't want to ask anybody because I'm supposed to know these things, but now. Now it's out there.
But if neither one of us knows, then that's maybe a good representation of, if there are more than one way to pronounce, that's okay.
Yes.
But either way, that person, he or she will be at the meeting and speaking about the team and how they work with the different information security departments and all of that culture that we're talking about. But what person who won't necessarily be on there is the marketing person. And that's where a lot of this session replay is coming in, because it was working with social media. So a lot of it's being called a meta pixel. So this pixel litigation, so because of Meta, the Facebook company. But there are others. Healthcare has been particularly had a real issue with this, but we're seeing now more as an industry, retail, and really, anyone who is marketed to these sorts of information sharing concerns, because it's something where when you're putting your claim information into your healthcare provider, because you had been logged in on Facebook earlier, it's automatically opted in, or there are ways that this works. And it's something where that you didn't realize, I mean, as an industry, I don't think we necessarily realized until fairly recently that this was more of a concern, because it wasn't a traditional security issue. It really was something that is about privacy. And not that privacy isn't a main concern, because you see it often termed as security and privacy, both are important, but it's indicative, I think, where the legislation has gone in the past now 5 years, where we're shifting more from a focus, traditionally focused on a lot of the security elements of, you need to keep this information safe because it can do harm otherwise, where you still want to keep the information safe because it can do harm otherwise, but the focus is on the ownership interest that an individual has in their own information. The best example of that, of course, is the GDPR. And now we're almost at the 5-year anniversary in just a few weeks here. And the shift from looking at spectrum, I couldn't think of the word there, sorry. As you look at the spectrum of, on one end you have security, one end you have privacy, we're shifting mm-hmm. more toward where security is always important, a sure. real focus on privacy. And that's why, and you see that in a lot of the new state comprehensive ones, California being a fantastic example of that, where even if they aren't necessarily following GDPR in the same way that some countries like Brazil or India are with their national comprehensive privacy statutes, that we see a real acknowledgement of the fact that you and I each have an ownership interest in our information, and we should be able to control that, yeah. of the right to be forgotten, all those sorts of things. That's coming from the privacy end, not the security end.
Yeah, you and I were talking about this offline a month or so ago, and you described it as a kind of paradigm shift.
Yeah, I think
it is. I have been thinking about that ever since. That is one of the most interesting ideas I've heard in a long time. It makes a lot of sense to me. I mentioned it to someone who has more experience in the industry than I do, and his response was, there's no difference between security and privacy. Or it didn't make a difference, but I don't agree. And I don't think that tort lawyers are, I think tort lawyers are a lagging indicator. I don't think the tort lawyers are as familiar with the dichotomy between security and privacy. I think they just know that they can, there's greater opportunity for plaintiffs and their lawyers to make claims, especially under laws like BIPA. Mm-hmm. But I think the existence of BIPA is emblematic of this subtle paradigm shift.
And it certainly is, because especially BIP, I think, because it's, you know, this is drafted it came out in 2008, I believe, if I'm yeah. correct, and sat there without much mm-hmm. news or anything until the Six Flags case, the Illinois Supreme Court case in 2019, which removed the need to prove that if you're the private right of actions, what everyone focuses on, that you can sue through the statute, and there are liquidated damages that you actually have statutory damages in there. But the removal of me having to establish that I was harmed takes away, I'd say, the equivalent of causation in the classic tort way of looking at it, duty, breach, causation, and damages. And being able, and because damages are provided for you already within the statute, because it's a private right of action, you're really only having to prove a duty and breach of duty. And that's where I was saying that distinction between what's required in what area, and it's got to be written notice and written consent in under BIPA. It doesn't have to be in other statutes, informed consent. You know, I always like to tell people, all written consent is informed consent, but not the reverse. And that's where it gets very difficult sometimes when you have a multinational corporation trying to ask all the questions that you really do need to ask as an insurer, of just to make sure that you're on top of all these regulations, because we haven't seen the regulatory shoe fall quite yet, but there's another thing recently, you know, Iowa just came out with their comprehensive statute. Indiana's talking about doing one as well. And fingers crossed, we'll get a national one soon, have to have 50 separate ones as we've been dealing with. But this isn't going away. And we have to both the brokers, the insurers, the insureds, the outside counsel, the forensic providers, we all have to be, everyone in this ecosystem has to be well-versed in this, because in the end, the entire purpose of what we're trying to do here is the same, which is avoid or at a minimum reduce or minimize or mitigate any harm to the insured. That's the entire purpose of why I'm here, even though sometimes it's people might think, well, you're an insurer, you're here to pay your mortgage and do that. That's true of any job, but I have a duty of good faith and fair dealing. And I take that very seriously. If what we're trying to do is ensure that we are providing the coverage that is needed, that we're willing to take on. I mean, it's not a panacea, but as an insurer, that we're providing the coverage we're willing to take on, that it's clear, and that, I mean, claims are somewhat inevitable. And so we need to make sure that we're on the front end, on the underwriting side, being very aware of what's going on the back end. And so when you ask me a question of what claims, like business email compromise, yep, still a thing, still something that we care about, and still a coverage that is going to be in, I'd say, the vast majority of any policy that someone looks for. These classic ones aren't going away, and the fun part and the hard part of cyber is trying to anticipate what's going to happen next.
And that's exactly where I was going to pick up with you. No, and by the way, you are a cyber evangelist, and you are one of the most thoughtful people on these subjects that I know. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on. And because I take interest in, and in many ways I'm governed by your thoughts, because I think you're months, if not years ahead. So on the point of where we're going, is there anything, any one or couple things in our last moments here that you think our audience needs to know? It's particularly important in limiting the potential claims that they might face over the next 6 to 12 months.
Honestly, the same advice I've been giving for a very long time is still true, which is, we talk about knowing where your crown jewels are. We don't hear that phrase as much anymore because, thankfully, as an industry, and I mean all of us in the ecosystem, insurance very, very much as part of that, we're past a lot of the introduction. Now, there's still a lot of new buyers, and we're happy to help educate them of what cyber insurance can do and what it's intended to do. For a lot of the people who have been, the companies who have been purchasing this for quite some time. So it's kind of two separate questions of, if you were brand new, get a clear idea of what your needs are. I mean, it may just be that it's a contractual requirement and you have to have X amount, and that's fine. If that's what gets you in, I promise you, this is a risk that you're going to want insured. It just is something that's not getting any smaller and isn't getting any less complex. So the more we can do that, but it's your backups, your segmentation, and have a plan, because there's nothing more that an underwriter will really appreciate, and brokers are quite the same way, of having a plan, because we understand that certain things like MFA that we expect to see now across the board is that we are, it's not a snap of the fingers, that people have budgets and they have timelines and they have other things they have to do. But we want to see, make clear that it's a priority, because this, you care about how many sprinklers you have because you're regulated to do so. Well, until we have a clear cyber regulation across not just an industry, but a whole geographic area for the U.S., then know what's going on. Look at the NIST requirements. Make sure that you're keeping up to those standards, and have the discussion with your broker, who have your interest at heart as an insured, because they have to. They're your fiduciary. Also because they're good people. I don't want to say it like they're just
of course,
only because they're forced. All my broker friends now can not think I'm speaking ill of them. But that's the be transparent. But tell me where you're going. Because if I know where you're going, then I know where I fit in on a journey. And the more I know now of, okay, they don't have all of this, but they will have this, I can start planning out where we fit in and how we can help provide solutions.
Right.
Because we really are, thankfully, on the same page with respect to, again, what I was saying at the beginning, sustainability is something everyone in this market wants. And I mean, I've done this so many times, you know, in conversations about how no one wants that. And I have yet to find anybody who says, I don't know, I kind of like it like this right now. So that's good.
No one says that. No one says that.
Well, I'm sure someone might. I just don't know who they are. But the
true.
We want to be having having these conversations, building on them 5 years from now. And if we are not providing insureds with an idea that really this sustainability is a priority for all of us, this is why we take the positions that we do, and why the cheapest isn't always necessarily the best. You know, you want to make sure that it's a partner that really is taking an interest in what you're doing. This is part of your risk transfer. And I want to help businesses keep selling widgets.
Yeah.
And I said, as insurers, we want to do that.
Your insurance company and your broker are your business partners, particularly Absolutely. In the cyberspace. And yep. the more communication you have back and forth, the more security controls you will have in place, because you'll have to have them in place at the peril of losing or not getting insurance. And the more risk, the greater risk you'll be able to transfer to your insurance carrier.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great advice.
That's the thing to remember. And I wish I could give credit to whoever said this, but even sprinklered buildings burn. I remember that all the time. I'm an old monitoring counsel for years, which is a lot of claims work. And that's stuck in my head the entire time, which is insurance does not replace preparation or vice versa.
And right.
It's the laziest example I can give, but it's one of the easiest of, I started wearing my seatbelt because it was required by law. And then you start to realize, no, it's actually a pretty good idea. And it doesn't guarantee that I won't get hurt or that there won't be damage to my car or things like that. But mitigation and risk transfer aren't mutually exclusive. And the more we start to think of it in that way, the more I think how we fit into a company's overall business plan, how insurance truly fits into that business plan becomes a bit more clear. And it's not magic. It's not like I'm the Oracle at Delphi trying to pull up something new, but it helps to center me in how we approach things, of speaking to the motivation that these insurers need, of what their actual needs are, not just bells and whistles we can tack on because they look showy.
That's great advice, Brian. Thank you. We're going to leave it there. I can't say anything better than that. I'm so glad we had you on. Grateful for the opportunity to talk to you as always. And I hope you'll come back again soon for another episode, because I'd love to talk to you again about some cutting edge topics.
Oh, absolutely. Kevin, you have me whenever you need me, man. It's such a pleasure being here, and look forward to doing it again.
Oh, same back, right back at you. Thanks to you, Brian Dusek, and thanks to all of you for watching our latest episode of CyberSip. We're back soon with another episode.
The CyberSip podcast is available on BarclayDamon.com, YouTube, LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Like, follow, share, and continue to listen.